night. Welcome to Real News on this October 24th, 2017. I'm David Knight. We have a big show today. We're going to be talking to a couple of individuals about the tactics of communism and about the history of communism as we approach the big day 100 years ago, October 25th, 1917. It's been about 100 years of communism. We're going to take a look at how it is affecting us today. Yes, political correctness is at the heart of the one of the key tactics of the communists to take over a country. Of course, the other part of it is to take over health care. Lenin talked about that in detail. So we're going to be talking to Art Thompson of the John Birch Society. We're also going to be talking to a journalist who has experienced the effects of political correctness himself as he's been banned by General Motors from reviewing their cars. You know, an automotive journalist has to have the cars supplied to them so they can review them. And that's something this guy has done, Eric Peters has done for 20-some-odd years. And now because he is politically incorrect, yes, he's actually a libertarian, because he's politically incorrect, he has now been banned from reviewing their cars. We're talking to him. We're also going to take a look at Facebook's new efforts of censorship. Of course, it all began as political correctness, didn't it? That's how it always begins. Then it goes into various forms of economic censorship. And now what they're trying to do is essentially create a, I guess we could call it a face wall, a kind of Facebook firewall of news. So you're going to pay them for the news. If you don't pay them for the news, they're also going to be labeling you as fake news, and they're also going to be threatening people who share that information on the personal side. They're going to be threatening them and saying, you know, you might be liable for a lawsuit if you share information that other people have said is fake. There's also a currency war. We have so many wars, don't we? You have real wars that are going on in Syria, Yemen, and other places in the Middle East. That's now spreading to Africa, into Niger, and others. And we also have the Cold War that has been revived by the Democrats with Russia. And there is a currency war, folks, joining things like the drug war as well. But there is a currency war, and this is one that is taking place on the international stage. We've had Russia triple its purchases of gold. We've had multiple reports in just the last several weeks about nations that are hostile to the United States trying to stop the petrodollar. We're going to explain the latest moves against that, as well as what's happening on the border. Meanwhile, we have GOP voters saying that they want Mitch McConnell to step down. Yes, 56% of Republicans say that Mitch McConnell should resign as majority leader. He has the worst approval rating of any politician in the survey. 16% favorable, 52% unfavorable. Bill O'Reilly, he says, is mad at God over allegations of sexual misconduct. How did he bring in Harvey Weinstein? You know, it's Meryl Streep who said, I'd like to thank God, Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein is part of this. Not the real God is to blame for that. We're also going to be taking a look at Jesse Jackson. Going to have a clip for you coming up. He says that these NFL players are nothing but slaves. They've gone from picking cotton balls in the fields to picking up footballs in the fields. So they're some of the best paid slaves that we have ever seen in history. And we have some developments, of course. You've heard all the stories over the weekend that broke that President Trump is in 2 days going to finally release the CIA's files on the JFK assassination. Now, we don't know if that's going to be redacted. We don't know, because usually when they say they're going to release stuff, everybody gets excited, and then what you get is a sheet of paper with a bunch of big black bars on it. If they're not redacted, will it be anything other than the official story? We'll wait and see. It is certainly something that needs to be out there, something that we need to take a look at. But the interesting thing that is happening, and we're going to talk about this after the break, we're going to talk about developments on surveillance. What records are they keeping about us? Not just about JFK, but what records are they keeping about us? The Section 702 is coming up for reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Remember, it was Michael Hayden who bragged about the fact, I didn't need Section 702. I had orders directly from the president. Yeah, if the president does it, it's not illegal. That's what they've told us for so long, but it is. And if you do a Patriot Act, it is still unconstitutional. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome to The Real News on this Tuesday, October the 24th, 2017. We have some interesting guests coming up. The topic, I guess, today as we look at this, the central part of it, as it has been for so many days, is censorship. Economic censorship and warfare in the name of political correctness, as well as the efforts that Facebook is pursuing to make sure that anyone that disagrees with them is not only intimidated, not only shamed, but then also basically put off in a firewall. If you don't pay them, they're not going to promote your information, and probably they're not going to promote your information even if you try to pay them if they don't agree with you. That is the censorship that we're seeing now. And, of course, the Prager Institute is now suing Google for taking down their political videos. It is a conservative libertarian group that has political videos, and they're now being censored by Google. Finally, somebody is taking them to court, and they're going to need a lot of help in that because Google has some very deep pockets. Now, as we look at the JFK files that are going to be coming out in 2 days, and as I said in the last segment, when these get released, hopefully they're going to be something other than a sheet of paper with a lot of black bars on it. But that's typically what has been the case as we get information released from government agencies. And even if it is not totally redacted, it may just be the official version. You know, when I saw this story from the Daily Mail, psychic Uri Geller claims that he was hired by the CIA to investigate JFK's assassination. This is even before the great idea that the FBI had, where they would examine Stephen Paddock's brain to find out what his motives were, or see if they could find some kind of a physical deformity or tumors in his brain that would give them some explanation as to why he did this. Because they don't have any motive. They don't have any motive. They don't have the ability of this guy. Everything that they find in the physical evidence contradicts their narrative, and that would be all three of the narratives so far that it contradicts. But, you know, when we look at this situation, I thought, why Uri Geller? Why would Uri Geller be hired by the CIA? You know, he's not just a psychic, but he's this guy that claimed that he could bend spoons, right, with his hands and psychic energy. So maybe they thought that Uri Geller had an explanation for the magic bullet that changed direction so many different ways, right? He's tapped into that force in the universe that can cause physical objects to reverse direction and to bend spoons and so forth. So I guess it kind of makes sense that Uri Geller would be hired by the CIA. We're going to get some crazy stuff here, folks, coming out of these files. Meanwhile, what have they not read? You know, the CIA and the NSA and all these people, they're constantly reading our stuff, aren't they? But here's something that they have not read. Trump's CIA watchdog pick never read the Senate torture report. This is the guy that President Trump has nominated to be the watchdog of the CIA. Did you know that the CIA had a watchdog? I would never have guessed that the CIA had a watchdog. I kind of thought they were let loose and off the leash. I thought that they were basically running our government as some kind of a deep state, dark force here that's behind the government. I didn't know that anybody was watching them. I didn't know they had a watchdog, but they have a person in that position who is collecting a salary and pretending to be the watchdog of the CIA. President Trump's nominee to be the CIA's watchdog told lawmakers that he never read the Senate's infamous torture report. Christopher Sharpley, who has served as the CIA's deputy inspector general since 2012, told the Senate Intelligence Committee that he had never read the full report detailing how the CIA treated terror suspects after 9/11. Maybe he should read the book by John Kiriakou. Maybe he should talk to John Kiriakou. No, that's right. They put him in jail, didn't they? The only information that we really have about the CIA torture program that the public has, they put that guy in jail for it. And he said, of course, he would do it again because he's that kind of guy. He ought to be the watchdog. You ought to put John Kiriakou in as the watchdog of the CIA. Then I would have some confidence that you've got a man of integrity who is actually going to do something about it instead of somebody who's been part of the cover-up for the longest period of time. And then one of the senators, Martin Heinrich, who's a Democrat from New Mexico, said, "It seems to me that it's awfully hard to learn the potential lessons of the torture report if it wasn't read." Yeah, that's right. Now, he did say that Sharpley said he had read summaries of the report. I'm sure he's very interested in making sure that the CIA doesn't do anything illegal and doesn't torture anybody. Sharpley also said that he had not destroyed the torture report as he initially thought he did. Darn it, I thought I'd destroyed that thing. You mean it's still there? We sent it to the Senate, wanted them to, told them that we wanted them to read it, but then when they started doing stuff with it, he started, the CIA started coming after Dianne Feinstein. And even Dianne Feinstein, that old fossil who has served as a useful idiot for the surveillance state, even Dianne Feinstein was incensed. It's like, you're spying on me? You're spying on me? I mean, it's like, but I'm Dianne Feinstein. I'm part of the establishment. I'm part of the system. I'm not supposed to be spied on by the surveillance state. And as we've said from the very beginning, folks, these politicians who love the surveillance state, who love the NSA and the CIA and all the things that it gives them, they are going to be the first ones up against the wall, not from us, but from the surveillance state. We've talked about that with President Trump as well. The fact that this surveillance state is now openly opposing him, that this surveillance state has been part of this false Russiagate narrative. They were the ones who were involved with the uranium trades years ago, the FBI, the CIA, all these people. They knew about it for 15 months. And they created this situation, as we've said multiple times. And now it's interesting, you know, even people who typically don't get into intelligence issues like Rush Limbaugh says, well, you know, I think that they created this whole thing to cover up their crimes. You think? We've been saying that for months. I don't know why anybody would not know. You don't have to be a genius to notice that. You just have to pay a little bit of attention to understand that Hillary Clinton and the FBI, people like Comey, people like Mueller, are doing this thing. These are the people who are doing the investigation. They're the ones who actually did the collusion with the Russians. And so they created this whole situation and pushed it on to Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump is a big cheerleader for law enforcement. He's a big cheerleader for surveillance state and torture. That's one of the issues that I have with President Trump. I disagree with him strongly on those issues. I mean, I still voted for him. He's infinitely better than Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to agree with anybody on everything, and I think it's a very important issue. I'm not minimizing it. But there are also other important issues that I agree with him very strongly on. But this is one I disagree with him on. And he has to understand that he and even people like Lindsey Graham, the big cheerleader for the military-industrial complex, the big cheerleader for the surveillance state, people like Lindsey Graham, people like Dianne Feinstein, were just amazed to find out that they were being surveilled by this organization. They thought it served them. They don't understand. They serve it. And they're going to find out who the servant and who the master is if they get out of line, if they try to rein this thing in, if they try to oppose its wars that it creates. You know, I find it interesting. President Trump is making some moves that are very important against the CIA. It was only a couple of months ago as I tweeted out, and you can find me on Libertarian. I tweeted out over the weekend. I said, you know, we look at this, the fact that Trump is releasing what the CIA had in its files about the JFK assassination. It's only taken a couple of months after President Trump stopped the CIA weapons shipments to the so-called moderate rebels in Syria. And we all know who they were. We all know who these people that John McCain were meeting with are. These are people who were Al-Qaeda. They had multiple names. Oh, no, we're al-Nusra now. We're not Al-Qaeda, we're al-Nusra. Well, eventually they came out and they admitted who they were. And so we knew all along that weapons were being, we had so many reports and we talked about people seeing weapon drops and they would run out of an area and they would abandon all of this stuff, not make any attempt to destroy it. They would just leave it for them or they would airdrop it to them. We had people say, hey, I was a Chechen terrorist I was shipped in by the CIA to fight in Syria. So as soon as President Trump stopped that weapons program in Syria, ISIS started having major defeats. It didn't take very long once you stop the CIA from arming them for these guys to start to collapse. It was the CIA that was fighting that war with ISIS. They created them, they trained them, they armed them, they gave them money. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Yeah, stay with us because we're going to talk about what's happening in Las Vegas. We got some updates about some things that are tangential with Vegas, as well as the surveillance state. There's a bill right now. They're calling it the Liberty Act. And you know that if it is something that's that positive, they're going to be coming for your freedom. You know, it was Lenin who said, yes, it is true that liberty is precious. That's why it must be rationed. And that's the attitude of our government, isn't it? Everything turns into a privilege, and they must know everything that you do. As William Binney, the former global technical head of the NSA, said, he spent a career watching the Stasi in East Germany. He said, what we have here is far worse than the Stasi, far worse than any totalitarian regime that we've ever seen. The leverage that they have with the technology that they have. And now they're trying to make this Section 702, which lets them do dragnet spying, presumes to give them authority over the Fourth Amendment. It's not constitutional, but we don't have the Supreme Court justices who will actually stand with the Constitution. We have some senators now who are trying to push back against that. We have Ron Wyden, the guy who famously asked James Clapper, are you spying on the American people without a warrant? And remember, James Clapper looked down and he was rubbing his face and he couldn't look him in the eye, couldn't look us in the eye when he lied and said no. And then it was just a couple of months after that that we got the Ed Snowden documents that gave us all the details, massive documents that told us the multitude of ways that our government was spying on us. He was caught bold-faced lying, but we knew he was lying. We'd had the NSA whistleblowers from 2001 on, people like Binney, people like Thomas Drake and others who had told us what was happening. But it was Ron Wyden talking to him and seeing that lie, and then 2 months later, getting the documents, the actual details, the volumes of details that we got from Ed Snowden. You know, the devil really is in the details, isn't it? And that's what we're starting to get right now about the real Russian collusion. We're starting to see those details. We knew what was happening. We knew what was happening, just like we knew what they were doing to us in 2001. We knew they were spying on us, but now we're getting the details on this as well. What will happen with this? Will we have Jeff Sessions do anything at all with it? We'll have to wait and see. Now, I'm going to get to the information about Vegas here in just 1 second. But before we do, I want to tell you about some of the sales that we have that will be ending soon. BrainForce Plus, still 50% off, the deepest discount we've ever had on BrainForce Plus. If you haven't tried it, now is a great time to try it. I guarantee you're going to like this. It'll really focus your mind. It'll really sharpen you up. It's a great supplement. If you've taken it and you like it, you can get it for 50% off and stock up right now. Also, Super Male Vitality, 30% off. Anthroplex, 50% off. Silver Bullet and Winter Sun are being heavily discounted to help you get your vitamin D and your colloidal silver daily. Pick them up now for 50% off and save big on some of our favorite products. As a matter of fact, there was just an article today about, it was on Daily Mail, and they were talking about how to tell if you have a vitamin D deficiency. Are you getting colds more frequently? This is happening because people don't get outside enough. As I was driving in, I heard a story about how Under Armour is going to stop making clothing for so many outdoor activities because nobody's buying them, because nobody's going outdoors. We're all staying inside and we're watching television, or we're playing with games or with our phones. We got a nation of couch potatoes. And if you don't get sunlight, you're going to get cold. And you're going to get colds and other things. Vitamin D will help your body to get some of the nutrients that you're missing by not getting outside, not getting in the sun. So it's important to supplement that if you are a, I guess we could call everybody latchkey Americans. That's basically what we've all turned into, isn't it? Also, you can get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. That's VITA10. Okay, let's take a look at what's going on with surveillance. Senators are pushing a bill requiring a warrant. About that, what a novel idea. Pushing a bill that would obey the Constitution. You're supposed to have a warrant to look at this information. But, of course, they come at you and they say, well, they didn't have in mind telephones when they wrote this, so we can do whatever we want. See, the technology has changed, so we can do whatever we want. No, the principles remain the same. You have a right to privacy in your person. Oh, what about the TSA? Oh, well, never mind. Never mind about that person thing. And your person, your papers, and your effects. In other words, they were trying to be as inclusive as possible when they listed all that. But, of course, our government doesn't care. They only make a pretense of swearing an oath to the Constitution so they can then get power and do whatever they wish. This is an effort that's being led by Democrat Ron Wyden, who was the one who grilled James Clapper, and Rand Paul. Of course, Rand Paul. Rand Paul is always there defending liberty, and not just when it comes to this. Ron Wyden has been good on this particular issue, but he doesn't defend liberty on any other issue that I know about. But Rand Paul is there on all the issues. This would require a warrant for queries of data belonging to any American collected under the program. How many times are we going to hear this? Because, you know, the information that was collected on President Trump and his campaign people, they said, well, you know, you're not supposed to be able to collect that on any Americans. That was the FISA Act that was put in back in the 1970s because we knew that the NSA and the CIA and the FBI were spying on Americans without warrants. That's why they created the FISA Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Understand what the F stands for? The F is for foreign. And so you can't spy on Americans in America. You can't spy on foreigners in America without a search warrant. That's why it was foreign surveillance. But they don't care. See? Nobody cares. We got Dodson here. Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is considered by U.S. intelligence officials to be amongst their most vital tools used to combat national and cybersecurity threats and to help protect American allies. And that's why we have things like the Las Vegas shooting. So that they can justify their existence. That's why the FBI is constantly creating events. And remember when we had that real shooting in Garland, Texas? These two guys got out, started shooting people. They shot a security guard. He's now suing for $8 million. Why? Because the FBI was encouraging him to tear up Texas and even accompanied them to the shootout. And they have had fake events after fake events. And here they are in Las Vegas. Here's a story from the Review Journal in Las Vegas. How the FBI and the ATF are aiding the Las Vegas shooting investigation. See, they're not obstructing it. They're aiding it, according to the local paper. They say the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives are assisting local investigators to determine whether the killer acted alone. Well, that's still an open question to them. I thought they had determined that he did, or whether he was aided in the shooting that killed 58 people. See, there's so many eyewitnesses on this. They still have to talk about it being an open question, because even though they're going around and they're ignoring eyewitnesses, even though they're confiscating and destroying evidence and obstructing this investigation, they say that the local authorities are still the lead in the investigation. This is a tragedy. It is a mass shooting and not a terrorist attack. Therefore, it is being led by the local police with assistance from the FBI. You know, they come in and they say, hey, we found cameras here. Oh, well, the FBI just took them. I said at the time, you'll never see the video that was on them again. That's what they do. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
All right, I was just talking about how the FBI and the ATF are just there to help the Las Vegas Police Department. You see them at the press conferences. You see the sheriff kind of nervously glancing over at the FBI handler who is there running this incident. And I'm reminded, as we look at this, of the 4chan report that came out 3 weeks before the event, right about the same time, interestingly enough, that the CEO of MGM was selling off 90% of his stock, as I covered yesterday. 90% of his stock when 18 out of 21 analysts said it rated it as a buy in a bear market. They rated it as a buy, and he sold off 90% of his stock 3 weeks beforehand. And then, of course, we had the 4chan report saying that there were people who were working together in Vegas, casino owners who would like to see a big event against critical infrastructure so they could put in body scanners. And so then we have this report here about the underwear bomber. Remember him? The underwear bomber. I like to call him the body scanner bomber because he was a guy that created the event for them that allowed them to bring in the body scanners that Michael Chertoff, the guy who'd been our first head of Homeland Security, then he retired into a very lucrative retirement where they created body scanners. And then they created the perceived need for body scanners. As we had Kurt Haskell, an American lawyer out of Michigan, was on the plane, and he and his wife were sitting there waiting to board the plane, and they saw this guy come up. He said he looked like he was drunk or on drugs, looked like a bum, and there was a guy in a three-piece suit talking to the person, the airline's person at the gate, speaking English, getting him onto the plane. And then he proceeded to be the underwear bomber, interestingly enough. Now he is doing hard time. He is suing the Department of Justice over the way they are treating him in federal prison. They've got him in hard time solitary confinement. Imagine that. Why would they put him in solitary confinement? Well, they don't want him talking to anybody, including other prisoners. And so he is suing them. He says he's being held in solitary confinement. It violates, he says, his rights as a devout Muslim. That's right. Don't put any Muslims in solitary confinement for anything. But anyway, says it hinders him from participating in group prayer. That's how it violates his rights. And that they're forcing him to eat foods that are considered haram or religiously forbidden. But that's not the worst stuff that they're doing to him, folks. He's in a cell 23 to 24 hours a day, a cell that measures 12 feet by 7 feet. With solid walls that prevent prisoners from viewing the interiors of other cells or having any contact with other prisoners. There's a solid door, the small slot, et cetera, et cetera. You've seen the drill, right? But he has also been force-fed, which is a kind of torture. They say it makes you feel, made him feel like he was drowning, and it caused him to vomit. That's the force feeding that they put the people through. But just understand that when this comes through, we may mock this and we say, oh, this is a terrorist, and he's now suing people because of the way he's treated. Well, understand that this is a guy who was, I believe, a useful idiot. And he may be somebody who really does truly hate the U.S. government. But as I was saying before, and as we've had, 4 or 5 years ago, we had Judge Napolitano talk about the fact that out of 21 events at that time, terrorist events, 17 of them had been created by the FBI. They had helped these people along. They had given them implements and so forth. We've now got a lawsuit about the only terrorist attack in the United States that was claimed by ISIS before this Vegas shooting. The only one. And it was the FBISIS. It was the FBISIS. You think the FBISIS may have given this guy some stuff and nudged him along and put him on the plane? He doesn't know what he's doing. He's just an idiot patsy. He couldn't even pull that off on the plane. But that's how they get what they want. And that may be, I think that's a very strong motivation. We have seen our government stage real events. They don't care if people die or not. I mean, it could be a fake event or it could be a real event. They don't care as long as they get what they want. Now, I'm not saying that nobody was hurt. I believe people were actually, many people were hurt and killed in this event. I've said that from the very beginning. I don't think if they were going to try to do a fake event that they would do something of that magnitude and that scale. It's too easy to debunk. You would have to have too many people in on the gag to pull it off. And so I think that is absolutely for real, the event that happened there. I think that 9/11 was for real. I think people died for real in 9/11, but I don't think that the narrative that we got about it is anywhere close to being real. And that's the way I feel about Vegas as well. And as we look at the fallout from this, interestingly enough, the Democrats have given up on gun control, pretty much. Chuck Schumer has said, and Chuck Schumer has been one of the biggest gun grabbers out there in the past. But he's now saying, wait a minute, wait a minute. It's the economy, stupid. Remember, Clinton? They got so caught up in their socialism. They got so caught up in their identity politics and their political correctness that Americans don't even know who these people are anymore. They have absolutely no contact. Even Jane Fonda was saying, you know, we just don't know what the struggles are of the people out there. We have no contact with them. And so we have to get there and talk to them again. So they're going to try to reestablish connection with the American people. And they're going to do that through economics. It was when Bill Clinton campaigned that they kept saying, it's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid. So it's going to be back to the economy. They're going to talk about pocketbook issues. They're going to try to spin socialist control, government control of medicine into a pocketbook issue. Yeah, it's a pocketbook issue. They have taken your pocketbook. And they're going to also do that with tax reform. They're going to try to tell you that it's not fair. So they're staying away from gun control. Staying away from gun control, they're going to go with economic issues. And meanwhile, We got the Republicans offering up a few gun control bills, and Paul Ryan has absolutely frozen the pro-gun bills that were working their way through Congress. Not going to move forward with that. So he's going to protect the gun control status quo. And the Democrats are not going to try to push that any farther along. And then we have Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson, who says that these NFL multimillionaires are actually nothing more than slaves. And let's hear that quote. You got to hear it to believe it. Here's Jesse Jackson.
All free agents around the world owe their wages and their benefits to Kurt Flood, who paid the price of rebelling against the system of oppression. And it is oppressive. To go from picking cotton balls to picking footballs and basketballs without freedom is not very much progress. It's just a lateral move. And what's
See, did you realize that? Did you realize that these multimillionaire players in football, did you realize that they're being oppressed? They're being oppressed. They're absolutely being oppressed. And what they're doing in terms of picking up footballs and picking up basketballs, that's no different than picking up cotton. And those football fields are no different than those cotton fields back home. This is the spin, the narrative. When we come back in the next segment, we're going to cover Frederico Wilson, and we're going to take a look at what's going on with that. But again, it's that idea of privilege as they insult and call the flag and the national anthem racist, as they insult the fans who are there. And when President Trump says something about it, the NFL commissioner says, "You have the audacity to insult us." It's that sense of entitlement, that sense of privilege that comes from all this. And that is what Jesse Jackson is tapping into. Why is he doing that? Because Jesse Jackson wants to have racial conflict. That's what he thrives on. That's what makes, that's what fuels him, really. And that's what fuels most of what the Democrats are doing. That is why they haven't succeeded. And if Chucky Schumer and others who are a little bit more wiser understand that, then we're in trouble, because then they're going to bring in their socialist agenda by promising us free stuff like Bernie Sanders. And we've got a clip that we're going to play for you later in the broadcast about college students and their socialist mindset, how they love the Trump tax plan as long as they think that it's Bernie Sanders. You can sell them anything if you sell it to them as Bernie Sanders. But you know what? Bernie Sanders is no different than Bernie Madoff. It's a Ponzi scheme. Socialism is a lie and a Ponzi scheme. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Where hustle's the name of the game, and nice guys get washed away like the snow and the rain. There's been a load of compromising on the road to my horizon.
Frederico Wilson.
But a load I'm of compromising. Be where the lights are shining on me.
I'm a rock star now.
Like a rhinestone
cowgirl. Rock star now. And offers coming over the phone. That's what she's getting. She's a rock star now. Let's talk a little bit about this back and forth. And some of this is funny, but some of it isn't. I mean, at the heart of the issue is a tragedy that's been politicized. But let's talk about the back and forth. Last Friday, we had CNN come back because, you know, she said, calling her an empty barrel, she said, that's racist. They actually did a report, said, is it really racist? That's kind of like the National Institute of Health. You know, earlier this year, the National Institute of Health spent $5 million to study fraternities at universities. And you know what they discovered? that actually drink more alcohol than other people do? I mean, who knew, right? Who knew? And who knew that Empty Barrel was not racist? It took an investigation by CNN, and actually, to their credit, they didn't try to spin it as racist. No, that was simply Frederica Wilson and the Congressional Black Congress that is still spinning it as racist. But even CNN says, no, it isn't. But they went back and they did research. They went back and they looked at Plato, for example. They said, well, we found the earliest reference to this being something from Plato. An empty vessel, he said, makes the loudest sound so that they that have the least wit are the greatest babblers. There you go. I think it was said better by Kelly. She is an empty vessel, an empty barrel, right? And then they went back, they looked at Shakespeare and others. And they did a lot of reference in here. But, you know, the simple answer is that empty barrel simply means, it doesn't mean that it's racist. It means that she is a race-baiting, attention-seeking idiot. And that's exactly what she is. Let's play this interview where she pushed back on some of this stuff. Let's do video clip 7.
Did you hear General Kelly's remarks in the press briefing room yesterday?
I heard his remarks, and I heard him say that I bragged that I secured the money for the building of the FBI building in Miramar, and that's a lie. You know, I feel sorry for General Kelly. He has my sympathy for the loss of his son, but he can't just go on TV and lie on me. I was not even in Congress in 2009 when the money for the building was secured. So that's a lie. How dare he? However, I named the building at the behest of Director Comey with the help of Speaker Boehner, working across party lines. So he didn't tell the truth, and he needs to stop telling lies on me.
Well, his point was, I think, that, and though you're right, he didn't get the facts right on that, was that empty barrels make the most noise. And he was using that, he was likening that to you. Basically, that you're
I think that's a racist term.
That's racist.
I'm thinking about that when we looked it up in the dictionary because I had never heard of an empty barrel. And I don't like to be dragged into something.
I'd like to know what dictionary she found that listed as racist. I just, CNN doesn't even agree with her on that. And you know what? She's going back and forth about the details. She said that, and this is The Hill. They say this is a Congressional Black Caucus. They're proudly standing with Congresswoman Wilson, and they demand that General Kelly apologize to her without delay and take responsibility for his reckless and false statements. And again, it's okay for them to criticize a Gold Star family because now it's about politics, right? And so when people are talking back and forth about the widow who called Frederica Wilson and said, I'm going to get a call from President Trump. Why don't you come eavesdrop on that call and see if we can politicize this? I mean, that's what's going on. And so if you're going to politicize something, just as they come back and say to General Kelly, we can criticize you even though you're a Gold Star father because we disagree with what you had to say. You can also criticize a Gold Star widow who politicized this from the very beginning by calling a her congresswoman and saying, come listen to this. We can get something that we can use against President Trump. And when they talk about this, as The Hill says, a video published Friday by the Sun Sentinel of South Florida showed the Democrat lawmaker talking about pushing through the legislation. Hold that in your mind. She said, I pushed through the legislation. And then Wilson came back, as you just heard. She said, that was funded before I got to Congress. So which is it, Frederica? Did you push it through? Or did it get done before you got to Congress? Which one of those is it? And then she made this amazing statement over the weekend. She tweeted out that Najeer is real Donald Trump's Benghazi. He needs to own it. And I would ask, did you or Hillary Clinton ever own Benghazi? There's absolutely no connection between these two events, other than the number of people who died. These soldiers call for 13 hours for help and for reinforcements to have it ignored by President Trump, by General Kelly or others? No, that didn't happen. That did happen in Benghazi. And Representative Wilson never owned that. She never owned it, and neither did Hillary Clinton. And then when she talks about him lying on her. Here's Geraldo talking about Frederica Wilson. Let's play that clip.
Listening to General Kelly, who I just met on Air Force One and had a chat with him, he's a very serious person, very, very mature, very dignified. I was so humbled by his remarks, and as a war correspondent who attended many memorials in the field, in the theater, I just thought that isn't there anything in our life now that isn't sacred, that can be above politics? How can you use this occasion to attack the president? It shows the virulence of the hatred against President Trump. But more than that, it shows a willingness to denigrate and to make base something that should be so noble and unifying. And to hear him, to hear this dad, this serious man, so obviously pained. And when he told the story of going to Arlington Cemetery, my God, Steve, I felt like crying there, because he was so real, so sincere.
It's and very, it really, very powerful.
His remarks, his demeanor, his message was so at odds. I tell you, I happened to be watching. I was on the bike exercising, so I was clicking around as I customarily do, and I saw it, and I happened to watch his remarks on another network. And I was thinking of the reporters on that network. They must have felt embarrassed about the way they had politicized President Trump's call
to that widow. Because he answered every
question.
He answered every
single question. Even, you know, I've known Donald Trump forever. So I know that he's not the best ad libber. I know that if I tell him, if I was an aide and I said, tell him this is what he signed up for, it was a dignified thing, and President Trump would then relate it, I could see how he could maybe be clumsy in doing it. But to then politicize his syntax, or to take this noble
message of politicizing his syntax, that's exactly
of compassion, of inclusion, and make it more about partisan politics. I swear to God, I don't know where we go, and those reporters must have been so embarrassed.
They weren't. Did you watch the nighttime shows? Then they just started ripping Kelly, saying that he's become a Politico because he did what the president told him to do. You're going to tell me the president told him to do that? The president never told him to do that.
That was the least political speech I've heard in years from Washington. That was the most heartfelt speech.
That's right.
The point he makes about 1% of the American population actually serving, and a tiny percentage of the 1% actually are in combat risking their lives. What happened to those 4 GIs in Niger is tragic, and we have to investigate and find out exactly what the mission was, whether they were prepared, whether they were properly supported, and all the rest of it. But to take the president's condolence call to the widow and make that like everything else. It's just like everything else.
She became the number one booking at every network.
And it's so, I mean,
to intentionally politicize it turn it to racism, because that's what they do with everything. And when you look at the Congressional Black Caucus, remember, these are the people, as New American reports, that sent a delegation of 7 of its members to Cuba back in 2009 to enjoy Fidel Castro's hospitality. I mean, this is the Black Lives Matter group. This is the people like Jesse Jackson who were saying that the NFL millionaires are like cotton-picking slaves. This is what they will do. They will politicize everything, and they will politicize it by turning it into race baiting. This is the record of these people. She has, as they point out, New American, they rate people on a Freedom Index score in Congress from 1 to 100. She has averaged since 2011, 21. One year, she got down to 11 out of 100 in terms of people who follow the Constitution. Because she's a Marxist, that's where she's coming from. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back on this October the 24th, 2017. I'm David Knight, and we were just talking about Frederica Wilson. And it raises a lot of questions. It raises questions about politicization, and of course, they came back, and their only comment, you heard the comments that were made by Geraldo Rivera about how sincere and genuine and heartfelt what General Kelly said as he recalled what happens after a soldier is killed in battle. He went through all of that and then talked about this particular incident. And their only response was to come back and say, well, he'll do anything to keep his job. That's what she said. And other Democrats joined in there with her. I guess they will do anything to keep their job. So there is anybody that looks at the two of those people next to each other and hears those two speak, and here's what they have to say. There's absolutely no question as to who has more credibility here. And what is happening to the Democrat Party? As you point out, they will do anything. They will politicize any event, and they will turn it into a race event in most cases. They will turn it into identity politics. Not just politicize it, but identity politicize it. That's what this is all about. And I have a story here from the Washington Times. Cuban refugee warns that Democrats against the communist movement that has hijacked their party. That's precisely what has happened. This is a guy who fled Cuba as a boy. He's warning Democrats against what he sees as ideological parallels between what he fled and the Democrat Party. He said balance is good, but the Democrat Party no longer exists. He said rational, middle-of-the-road Democrats have been hijacked by the leftist, socialist, communist movement. This guy is a Marine veteran. His name is Dagnesis, I think is the way you pronounce his name. I'm not sure. But he's a Marine vet who twice made an unsuccessful bid for the U.S. House in California's 26th congressional district. He said his family fled Cuba after Castro's rise to power. He said his adopted grandfather was a high-ranking member of the Revolutionary Party but quickly fell out of favor with the regime. They had to escape to America, but it allowed his family to thrive coming to America despite having nothing. They came here with nothing. And I got to say, growing up in Florida, that was my experience. The people who came there as Cuban refugees, anybody who has escaped from Eastern Europe, anybody who has escaped from Castro, who has escaped from communism and socialism, they have a fire for freedom that you just don't find in Americans for the most part. Americans have been spoiled by the freedom that they've enjoyed. They've come to think of it as absolutely nothing. Americans have no more regard for freedom than a spoiled rich kid has for money. And it's really a sad thing. But the people who had it, who did not have it, I should say, these people who are coming from places like Cuba and Eastern Europe, they're like my parents' generation who were part of the Depression. That gave them an appreciation for money that a rich kid just doesn't have. And the people who came here from socialist, communist countries like the Cubans that I knew, they really appreciated freedom and they appreciated America where they could get that freedom. He said, only in America can you work hard and even have a third world, third grade dropout education. But if you work hard and you stay out of trouble, you'll still succeed. The sky is the limit. He said the presidential campaign of Bernie Sanders was useful because it brought the term socialist back into the mainstream political discourse. He said Sanders' popularity revealed that the Democrat Party at its root is a socialist one, even if it masquerades as the liberal party. And when we come back, I'm going to play you the response of college students who love the tax program as long as it was done by their Führer, Der Bernie. But if they find out that that same tax program is actually Donald Trump's tax program, they freak out. That is the politics of personality, but it is also the ignorance of people who turn into useful idiots. That's how they deceive people to take away their freedom. That has always been the tactic of the communists and the socialists. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. Tuesday, October the 24th, 2017, in the last segment, I was talking about an individual who was a Cuban refugee. He'd run for Congress several times in California, but he was somebody who didn't like socialism. So you don't have much of a chance in California. One of the things that he said to the college students that he was addressing was he said he was grateful for the presidential campaign of Bernie Sanders because they took the mask off in terms of socialism. He came out, he identified as a socialist. And they've used so many different terms to try to hide what they really are. They've called themselves liberals. It used to be, and that's why people will still say, well, I don't call myself a libertarian. I call myself a classical liberal. Because liberals used to be people who were for liberty. They used to be for freedom, economic freedom, and social freedom, and so forth, due process, individual rights. Those people called themselves liberals. Well, they stole that. They stole that. People who are authoritarian, people who want the government to control everything. They want the government to dictate everything. They want rules about everything. They want censorship, as we see. They want socialism. But they call themselves liberals because socialists had a bad connotation. It eventually became communism. As a matter of fact, Lenin said that. Lenin said, the goal of socialism is communism. Everybody knew the two were linked together. And even if you go with Adolf Hitler, he called his fascist party the National Socialists. And he was just coming to the same end, the same goal as Stalin. He just was pursuing it in a different order than Joseph Stalin. Stalin confiscated everything to start with. And Hitler said, no. We're going to use them to gain power, to conquer, and then we will take their stuff. So he came up with a economic fascism, a crony capitalism, if you will. But the end goal of socialism is communism, according to Vladimir Lenin. So let's go with that. But at least now, Bernie Sanders was candid enough to call himself a socialist. So now the people who have hid behind the label of liberal, they hid behind the label of progressive. Now they are owning, many of them, the term socialism. So that at least is a positive effect. But let's talk about what they do when they see a tax plan that has a different label. They presented some college students. This is a video that's on MRCTV.org. They presented some college students with a tax plan that was actually Donald Trump's tax plan. The kids thought that it was Bernie's tax plan. Here's what their reactions were.
This week, Donald Trump released his new tax plan, which was immediately shot down by his political opponents on the left. But what would those same people think if they were told that that tax plan was actually Bernie Sanders' plan? Today, we're at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. to find out. What were your thoughts on Trump's tax plan when you saw it?
It's better for the upper class than anyone else.
Pretty much a horrible for the middle class, especially the lower class.
I mean, not ideal.
It's probably not the most efficient nor beneficial to the general populace.
Pretty negative.
They're repeating Democrat talking points.
So Bernie Sanders came out with his plan. Some people call it the compassionate alternative. So we're getting opinions on Bernie's plan. First, one of Bernie Sanders' plans is to enhance the child tax credit, which is tax money given back to families when they have children. What do you think of that? Positive or negative?
Positive.
All right.
Same.
I was a social worker, so I understand how important tax credits like that are.
Parents that have children go through a lot, and I think giving back money to them really...
Of course, this is actually Trump's idea.
I think that's positive, definitely.
Positive.
He just told him it's Bernie's idea.
Eliminating the death tax. So when people die, it's a large tax on their estate that goes to their family. What do you think of that?
I think that's definitely something that we should be doing.
I do think that's a good idea because I'm from New Jersey and we used to have like a really heavy inheritance tax.
I'm in favor of that.
I'd say more positive.
I think I agree with that.
Bernie is planning to lower the small business tax rate to a maximum of 25%. I think that's a positive or negative?
These people are really stupid. I think Bernie wants to lower any taxes.
My family has a small business, so I would definitely think that's a positive thing.
Taxing them less makes more sense.
Any way we can help small businesses work and like thrive, it's definitely something that's beneficial for the country.
I think that would be great.
Overall, main idea of the plan, what do you think? Bernie did a good job, bad job?
I think overall, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job. Good job, Bernie.
I think it's a definitely good plan, a positive plan that can help everyone.
I think it's pretty good. definitely better than whatever Trump is proposing. I would make that leap right there. So.
What if I told you this actually is Donald Trump's tax plan, not Bernie's?
You got me.
It is. It's the Trump's plan.
Hello, Trump.
Now I hate it.
My old friend.
All of these are actually Trump's ideas. This is actually Trump's plan.
What?
Wow. Wow. That's interesting.
Ooh.
Wow.
I am shocked that I do agree with Trump on certain things.
Okay.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
I'm definitely happily surprised that it's like sounds a lot better than I would have expected it to.
I would have imagined he would be a little more stupid than that.
Okay, so but it's not a stupid plan?
No, actually, you're the one who's stupid.
So. But I think if you said it was Trump, at least for many people, it would be more opposition to it just because it was Trump.
It could be a policy of giving me ice cream, but if it's Trump, I'd be like, what's in that ice cream?
I definitely think there's an initial bias. I mean, I've done it myself. Like, I'll just like hear the word Trump and I'm like, ugh. I definitely think that's something to like need to be like looked over.
People, once they hear Trump or like Republican, they become like, oh, they suck no matter what.
I think people definitely hear the name and start to think things automatically. And also because a lot of people just go to the same news sources, the same media.
Groupthink. Groupthink, tribalism, that's the way they train these kids. And we are all capable of falling into that, opposing something just because of the person who proposed it, discounting something because of the news outlet that reported it. Make sure you don't do that. You know, make sure that you don't make those same kind of mistakes. One of the girls there said, yeah, my family has a small business. That would be good. Small businesses need to survive and thrive. We need to get rid of that death tax that's there that causes most family or small businesses to have to liquidate in order to pay the tax bill. It'd be good to lower taxes on small businesses and so forth. But then that was when they didn't know that that was Donald Trump's idea. Bernie is never, no socialist is ever going to lower your taxes. That would give you freedom and control over your life. That is the antithesis of why they exist. They exist to take money and power and decisions away from you. That is the essence of socialism. The lie of group rights. There is no such thing as group rights. And we see this playing over and over again, not only in the Weinstein situation, but also what we saw in California, where they said, all right, we believe that HIV is something that affects the gay community, so we're going to remove the penalties for intentionally spreading it. And ignoring the individual rights of the gay people who are going to get be infected with HIV intentionally. It was a deterrent to protect individual gays, but so that they can pretend that they are working for group rights, they're going to remove that. And we see the same thing happening with women's rights and the people not wanting to hold Harvey Weinstein responsible for this stuff. People like Hillary Clinton, who gives her predator husband a free pass as she parades around about women's rights and so forth. This is the idea. And that was a great video. It was by Campus Reform. They really got to the essence of what that is about. And as we look at these people who are always about anti-fascism, right? That's what the left on campus, they're the anti-fascist, the anti-fa. Well, here's some real fascist that nobody in the Western press wanted to talk about. This is a story from DC Clothesline. Tens of thousands of actual Nazis hold a march in the Ukraine, which is now a U.S.-funded U.S. puppet. And we have people like Senator John McCain and Vice President Joe Biden shown shaking hands with the people who lead that government, the individuals who led these marches. The largest neo-Nazi march in modern Ukrainian history was held last weekend, and yet nobody in Western mainstream media paid any attention to it. 20,000 neo-Nazi extremists chanting fascist slogans, brandishing torchlights, openly giving Nazi salutes as they praised genocide. But now we don't care about that because it's a U.S. government puppet, and it is supported by the people at the top. That bipartisan, useful idiots, the phony opposition. People like John McCain and Joe Biden support it, and nobody cares about the real Nazis. It's just the manufactured enemies of the anti-fa. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. Well, you remember when movies had high ideals? I still do. That's not what we see coming out of Hollywood right now. And as we talk about Weinstein Gate and other issues, now it is emerging throughout Europe. We have an interesting story here I'm going to tell you about right after I do a quick commercial here. It's on News Wars. The journalist who called Julian Assange a criminal over the claimed rapes is now facing pedophilia allegations himself. This is a Swedish media personality who is accused of grooming and raping young teens. So this is the guy who was trying to take down Julian Assange. And now we find out that he is himself a pedophile. And this is coming out of a social media campaign, hashtag Me Too. Yeah, I don't think that was Me Too from the victim's perspective, but I guess he could also come in here. He could put Weinstein Gate, hashtag Me Too, because now he has been exposed. So it's good that people are waking up to this. This is the last frontier. The pioneers of sexual depravity are now coming for your children. And they have been for quite some time. I guess the good news is that as we see this, and we were talking an interview the other day to the man Gabe Hoffman, who did An Open Secret, and he called it the Savile effect. Sorry, I keep using the American pronunciation about Jimmy Savile, and saying that once this all came out and he was finally exposed, after they broke that secrecy, you saw an explosion of people coming out and exposing it. Because it's like, if they're going to do it to somebody as powerful as Jimmy Savile, then maybe they will do it to this other person over here. And many of them were very powerful individuals. And so you had this explosion of this stuff erupting and a lot of people being convicted of it. And then it kind of went away. And hopefully it went away not because they started covering it up again, but because people were intimidated because they believed that they would actually be punished for this. See, when the rich and powerful get away with this, and then the not quite as rich and powerful get away with something, then it has an effect of criminalizing the entire society. It's true of any institution. We've talked about it with police brutality in the past and say, if you want to get something done about it, you got to say that it is everybody's problem. It's not just the problem of black people. All lives matter. And you got to say, we're going to do something collectively about this because it is affecting everybody collectively. And when you do that, you can actually make some change. But as we had Frank Serpico say, every institution has problems. They got bad individuals in it. So the question is, are you going to punish those individuals? Are you going to purge them out of the institution? Or are you going to allow them to stay? And if you allow them to stay, what you do is you corrupt that institution. Well, that is true of society in general. If you tolerate this kind of stuff because Hillary Clinton is doing it, or because Bill Clinton is doing it, or because Jimmy Savile is doing it, or Heath is doing it, then you have corrupted that society. And that is the only good news that we see right now, is that some of this stuff is being exposed. So we're going to get to that in just one moment. Before we do, real quickly, I'll remind you of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program, what funds this operation. We still have, for a very limited time only, 50% off of BrainForce Plus and 30% off of Supermale Vitality, 50% off of Anthroplex, and we've started two new sales now, Silver Bullet and Winter Sun. Heavily discounted. You can get 50% off of Silver Bullet and Winter Sun right now. That's our new special that just started. Also, we have 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. That's VITA10. Put that in to get 10% off our Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink. A great way to get essential vitamins and minerals without having to take a lot of pills. You can just put in a great tasting, makes a great tasting drink mix, or you can mix whatever you want to make it taste good. Get 10% off at checkout, VITA10, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink. All right, so let's take a look at this story that's breaking on NewsWars.com about this Swedish journalist who tried to come after Julian Assange. And I believe that that was a manufactured situation. The women there in that particular situation were not underage, but this individual, his name is Fredrik Virtanen. He hosts his own talk show on Swedish television. He is part of the, he's merged as they have been exposing people as part of the Me Too social media campaign. And, one individual said, yeah, I was, raped back in 2006 when I was 21. She said it was an older media man with power had sexually assaulted her. Finally, they get the information out. And then you have some other individuals come out. A 26-year-old woman said 10 years ago, that would be when she was 16, this individual, Virtanen, she said, was trying to force her to go to his apartment to drink alcohol despite only being 16. And then we have testimony that reportedly says that he also tried to rape a 19-year-old woman in the southern city of Eskilstuna 17 years ago. So this is starting to come out about that individual. And as we look at what is coming out with Weinstein, this article from Breitbart yesterday, the EU Parliament is an absolute hotbed of sexual harassment. Remember, we had Cynthia McKinney talking about the film An Open Secret, and we had Gabe Hoffman in. Everybody interviewed him on all three of the programs last week, and he has that movie free on Vimeo. You can find the links at Infowars.com if you can't find it on Vimeo, but take a look at that movie. It's very important to understand, as a parent, the tactics that pedophiles will take, what they will do to try to manipulate your kids. That's one of the most important things to find out about that. And also just to understand that this is a real problem. Normal people can't believe that other adults would do this kind of stuff. So you have to understand, yes, it really exists, and this is how they operate, and this is what I need to do to protect my child. And so Cynthia McKinney said, well, it's Hollywood now, but it's going to be Washington, D.C. Well, it's also going to be the EU. An investigation has revealed that the European Parliament is a hotbed of sexual harassment where senior MEPs feel that they can do whatever they want and prey on younger women. Meanwhile, in the seat of the EU, we now have this story out of the Daily Mail, a Belgian sex education website for seven-year-olds. Understand? For seven-year-olds. This is where all the transgender stuff is going. If they can tell these kids in kindergarten, you need to make up your mind about all these gender issues. They can't make those decisions at that age. That is child abuse. And it is setting up the idea that we are going to, that these kids can't consent to sex. We've always had statutory rape that happens before a certain age because we understand that adults can easily manipulate younger children. This is a Belgian website, features highly explicit drawings. It's come under fire as children as young as seven were recommended to view it. It illustrates explicit aspects of sex, ranging from various sexual positions and sex toys. They talk about oral sex to these kids as young as 7 years old, and it's being sold to them in the elementary schools. They say, well, this is meant for 15-year-olds. It's still not appropriate. They're doing it for primary schools, and the government says, one of the fathers said, well, I would call it perversity, but they say, well, I think we need to have a different program based on ages, you know, one for seven-year-olds, one for 11 and 12, and this is exactly what we're trying to do. They're unrepentant about it, absolutely unrepentant about it. They don't take it any more seriously than Weinstein does when he goes to his sex rehab, but it is outright pedophilia being sold in the schools there and here.
In Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. We're going to be talking to Eric Peters in this segment. Of course, Eric is someone that I've talked to multiple times before. He's an author. He writes columns. He has a website, epautos.com. He writes about cars, mobility, and liberty. And even if you're not interested in cars, you need to be interested in mobility and liberty. And he does it from a libertarian perspective. He doesn't talk about them necessarily being appliances or fashion statements, but about mobility and liberty. And because of that, even though he's been writing for 25 years, he is now no longer politically correct. And so here, as we're coming to the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, October 1917, and we're looking at these same tactics to control people that we have seen for so long, things like political correctness. I wanted to get Eric Peters on because he starts out this article, Raising the Jolly Roger, and I'll just read to you from the opening paragraph He says, most people don't know the term politically correct has its origins in Stalin's Soviet Union. Back then, it meant more than just excommunication from the party, or, I would add, being shamed by society into silence, right? It often meant that you would get an ice pick to the head. Well, it may come to that here as well. Of all things, of all places, the car business has now become hag-ridden by politically correct orthodoxies. And while the penalty for running afoul of these is not yet the North Korean thugs bashing in your skull, it is serious enough. So joining us now is Eric Peters. Eric, tell us, welcome, and tell us, what is happening to you that you would write that? about how they're punishing you for political correctness.
Well, thanks for having me back, Dave, first of all. And this whole business is just baffling and bewildering and depressing to me. As you know, I've been writing about cars for more than 20 years. And for more than 20 years, I've been getting regular access to all the car companies' press fleets to test drive their cars. Well, about a year ago, I came across an interesting story about General Motors having, of all things, a vice president for diversity. So I looked into this a little bit, and I wrote an article about it. And within 2 weeks of that article's appearance, I got cut off from GM's press fleet after 20-something years of getting them. And I contacted them to ask them why. And they were extraordinarily evasive, wouldn't give me any specific answers, just claimed that it was a business decision. And I continued to press them about it and pointed out the size of my readership, the size of my audience. And those are the metrics that they base loaning the cars to journalists on. You know, if you have if you've got a column that's read by several hundred thousand people, if you work for a major newspaper, a major, any form of media that's large, you get the cars.
And you've done stuff, let's just interject here. You've done stuff for the Wall Street Journal, for Chicago Tribune, Detroit News, Free Press, American Spectator, many others. You have your own website that gets a lot of traffic. So you're a bona fide car journalist. You've been doing this for 25 years. So why would they cut you off?
Well, then I looked into it a little bit more. And as it turns out, the individual that GM has hired to handle all of their interaction with media on the East Coast and probably nationally is a guy named Joe LaMaraglia, who is one of these SJW social warrior types whose background is the founder of GayWheels.com.
Well, I didn't know that gay people had different kinds of wheels than the rest of us.
Doesn't it make your teeth hurt? I mean, now it's no longer about being a writer and about the quality of your work. It's whether you are a gay writer or whether you are an African-American writer. There actually is a publication, if you can believe this, called African Americans on Wheels. So, you know, my report is, well, how about Arians and Audis, you know, if you want to go down that road? And of course, you know,
maybe they can rename GM and call it Gay Motors or something. I don't know.
So, yes, there are all these orthodoxies now. And it's you know, it's absurd and it's depressing because, as we're just talking about, who buys a car based on their sexual proclivities or their race? I mean, a car, you judge a car based on whether it appeals to you, whether it has the utility that you like, the performance that you like, whether it's at the price point that you like, you know, things like that that are irrespective of race. And the galling thing to me is, on the one hand, you know, we're constantly urged, headed toward a society that's colorblind, in which people are judged as individuals based on their merits, based on all of those things. And at the same time, they've got all of these extremely race-specific and now sexual orientation-specific categories that you're supposed to genuflect before.
That's right. And if you don't, you are censored. And I'm looking at your article here, and you've got a picture of Jesse Jackson. Have it subtitled "The Original Race Hustler." We just played earlier in the program another example of it. He's not only the original, but he is still, I would say, he's got to be the premier race hustler. Now, you know, Frederica Wilson has given him a run for his money, but you know, he was out there saying that the NFL players were no different than the slaves picking cotton. He said they've just exchanged their cotton balls for picking up footballs, is what he was saying.
Yeah,
these are people who paid millions of dollars to play this kid's sport, and he's talking about them being victimized.
Oh, and he's also threatening to boycott BMW, because apparently BMW is not diverse enough. You know, that's the catchphrase.
How is it not diverse enough? They got too many Bavarians in it?
Well, you know,
and they need to make it Black Motors matter or whatever.
It's got something to do with proportionality, I guess, you know, in terms of, well, you've got X percentage of African-Americans in the general population. Therefore, that many BMW dealerships must be owned by African-Americans in order for there to, you know, not be the clear taint of racism.
Oh, wow. Keeping score by quotas again. Yeah. Man, that's amazing. Well, you know, there was another article that you had that kind of went along the same line. It's not just General Motors who is doing this. And, of course, as you pointed out in this article, you went back and forth. You really couldn't get them to confess to it, could you?
No. You know, I asked them, look, if it's a business decision, please tell me what your metrics are so that I can, you know, do my best to meet them. You know, if you have a specific number in mind in terms of the audience size and so on, fine, tell me what it is. And they wouldn't answer. And, I know that they're full of beans because, again, I've been doing this for nearly 25 years now. I know
right.
a lot of people in this business. I've got a lot of colleagues in this business. And I know for a fact that they're continuing to give vehicles to people whose audiences are significantly smaller than mine. But, you know, those guys, unfortunately, and I can't name them because they're friends of mine, and they work in the corporations. You know, they work for corporate entities. And so they have to pull their punches. They have to fall into line. I'm independent, thank God. I went off the reservation, and I'm not constrained that way.
You know, I would periodically pick up the mainstream automotive press whenever I was in the market for a car. And other than that, I typically didn't read it all that much. But I have become an avid reader of mainstream automotive press because of what is coming in terms of automotive cars. And I see how they're cheerleading for all of this mm-hmm. stuff. And it has real political consequences. Whether you like cars or not, they're going to take away your mobility and they're going to take away your liberty. And they're working on this. And you think, I like my car, I'm going to keep my car. No, you're not. They're going to set this down. They're going to shut down your freedom to move around. It is a war tactic. It has always been a war tactic. When they talk about the key objectives and strategies in war, it's to stop people from moving, communicating, and shooting. Well, you know, they're going to come after the movement. That is a big part of it. So I'm trying to sound the alarm for people to get them to understand how this is part of a larger agenda to keep people confined into cities, to limit their movement, to make them dependent on government for transportation, even within the cities. So that's why I look at the automotive press. And, you know, when you do your reviews, you're doing them from a liberty perspective. And I appreciate the articles. You have articles that are just simply about politics, and I guess that's one of the things that really offended them. But when I look at most of these guys, I think that you know they're getting advertising from the big car companies, so they will hold back in terms of their product criticisms. You can tell that they're holding back, and they're trying to put a happy face on something that in many cases is really a pig. And they're trying to do their best to do that. And so you understand they're not coming at you honestly. That's what I appreciate about your reviews at epautos.com. But it's also the fact that now they're doing it for this whole, you know, the god of autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
That's what they're worshiping now more than any individual supplier. I'm going to get your comments on that when we come back, because one of the key individuals about that, of course, is Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have an article about why won't they send me a Tesla to test drive? I wonder why. We're going to be right back with Eric Peters. His site is epautos.com. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. That's right. How do we escape the political correctness that is pervasive in our society? I remember as a young child watching Dr. Zhivago. The love story, the affairs, all that stuff went straight over my head. I remember them taking his home. I remember the party taking his home. I remember when he complained about it. They said to him, "Comrade, you have been noticed." Well, our guest today, Eric Peters, has been noticed. He's been noticed by the gods of political correctness. He actually questioned, why does General Motors have a vice president in charge of diversity? What does that mean? As he points out, is African-Americans on wheels any less noxious than Aryans in Audis or Jews in Jeeps? Do gay people base their car buying decisions on who they sleep with? Or is it that they object to not having specifically gay people designing and selling them? Well, I'll tell you what I think this is about as we come back to Eric Peters. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that we sell here that support our operation, as Eric is trying to do car reviews, being boycotted by General Motors. He'll find a way to do it. I'm sure he will, and he's got great reviews. But we also have economic censorship being applied to us. Google and all the rest of these, Facebook, I haven't touched on that yet today, but Facebook is setting up a firewall for news organizations. They're trying to make it very difficult for people to share information. They're trying to intimidate people. Again, political correctness. Oh, we have determined, comrade, that that news article is controversially fake. We have determined that somehow with our special powers. And if you say, I want to share it anyway, then they come up and say, you know, you could be sued for libel. And you could be liable to be liable. And so this is what they do. This is the process of intimidation we get from our Marxist masters. But what keeps us going, what keeps us independent are the products that we sell. And so we've taken some of our most popular products and we put them on deep discount, like Brain Force Plus, 50% off. Super Male Vitality, 30% off. Anthroplex, 50% off. And we've just added two new popular products, Silver Bullet, that's our colloidal silver, as well as Winter Sun. Both Silver Bullet, colloidal silver, and Winter Sun, that's our vitamin D formula. It's a liquid formula. I take that every day. You can get those now 50% off, some of my favorite supplements. And you can also get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink. Great way to get your essential vitamins and minerals in an easy-to-swallow liquid format. And you can get that 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. That's VITA10. That's 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. You know, Eric, as I'm looking at this, I think that these people really don't care anymore about selling cars to individuals. I think that they're creating these kinds of positions because they are going to have one customer, and that's going to be the government. And so they want to toady up to whatever the political agenda of the government is. That's why they've got a vice president of diversity. What do you think?
I think that's certainly part of it. I'm actually working on an article that gets into another aspect of this, which is relevant and related to what we've been talking about as far as GM pulling my press car privileges. They moved their headquarters, if you can believe it, to Manhattan. I mean, can you think of a more car-unfriendly place than New York City?
Well, London, but yeah, not in the United States. I can't think of a more car-unfriendly place.
There was an interview the other day with Johann Denishin, who is the head of Cadillac Division, and his thrust is that you won't buy the car, and this is his quote, you will experience the brand.
Yeah.
Now, what
that
means is you're going to rent the car. You will not, you will not own the vehicle. You will simply use it temporarily, and you know your credit card or your debit card will be hit for however long you drive it for a couple of hours. They dun you for whatever the fee is. That's their new business model. That you're just going to have transportation as a service. That ownership will become a thing of the past.
And the governments are complicit in this. They want to see that happen. Because that will allow them to control transportation. They've tried everything they can with subways, with buses, with light rail systems. They're desperate to control our transportation. I can remember 25 years ago in Raleigh, I went to a meeting that the local city was doing. And she had just come back from Russia. And she was just could not control her enthusiasm over being able to ride from one side of Moscow to the other and paying a nickel. And I said to her, well, it only costs you everything, all of your freedom and your money. You have no idea what the cost is. You saw the price of 5 cents, but you don't know what that truly cost you. And we're not going to put up with that here.
So
that's what they want. They've been looking for a hook to make people dependent upon them. And they know that they can work in a private-public partnership. And they can create this kind of crony capitalism where with a combination of regulation and economic monopoly, they can control your movement and your transportation.
And they also see this as a new way to multiply their profits. If you run the numbers, if you do the math, if you buy a car, let's say, and you know your monthly payment is, let's just say, $400, and that's all they're getting out of that one particular car. Now imagine if they put that car into a ride-sharing fleet and rented it out to various people 7 days a week, or even 5 days a week, and in the course of 30 days, they can multiply the revenue stream from the rental fees on that one car by four or fivefold.
Yes.
That's what
yes.
they're looking for. And, it's a perk in addition to that, that they have utter control because you're no longer the owner. Therefore, you have no legal right to the car. The car will be controlled and programmed according to the corporation or the government. You are simply going to be using it, and it will become a privilege to use it.
That's right. That's right. Your movement will become a privilege. That's why I went back to the war on individuals, the war on individual rights. It's about moving, communicating, and shooting. They want to control your First and Second Amendment, but they also want to control your movement. And we don't even have a recognition of that in the Constitution. And we don't have a recognition of how vital that is in the public's mind. And as you're pointing out, they make more money if they lease a car than if they sell it. And they're going to make more money leasing it by the mile. And the government will be able to tax and to track every bit of your movement in that. So this is this kind of perverse partnership that we saw with Adolf Hitler. He said Stalin made a mistake because he took everything all at once. They're going to work with the corporations to enact this kind of corporate fascist control over our lives.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that the automotive media in particular is completely complicit. They amen and cheer all of this. The guys that I admired when I was young coming up, guys like Brock Yates and Chubba Chetta over Car and Driver, those guys got excommunicated years before I did. And now there's almost nobody in the automotive press any longer who challenges any of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because they all fall in line and they all worship Tesla. And you've got an article, why won't Tesla send me a car to test drive? I think we know the answer to that. Tell us.
Well, the answer is that I would give it an honest test drive and I would question some of the assumptions. For example, Elon Musk constantly touts the performance of his cars, that they're very quick. And I have no doubt that that's true. However, quickness is energy consumptive, and in a battery-powered vehicle in particular. So I think if you were to drive that car as appropriate for a car that costs $40,000 or $50,000, I think you would find that its advertised range is considerably less than advertised. Mm-hmm. I think you would also find that use of accessories, because remember, in an electric car, everything that's powered is powered by the batteries. That includes the air conditioning. That includes the heat. Think about how much heat or how much energy a space heater in a house uses, as an example.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to affect the battery range. And then you get into the issue of, well, if the range goes down, then I have to stop for a minimum of 30 to 45 minutes, assuming I can find a fast charger. They call it that. It's hilarious, a fast charger, to wait for 34 to 45 minutes so that I can get on the road and maybe go another 100 miles or so.
Yeah, in that case, a fast charger is kind of like when they call something smart, right? A smart car or whatever. It's not too smart. That's why they have to tell you it's smart or fast.
It's Orwellian double thinking in language, you know, the Patriot Act. You know, it means the exact opposite of what they're telling us.
That's right. Yeah, well, you know, I found it interesting because on the same day that we see this story about 80,000-pound trucks tailgating each other, and soon it will be perfectly normal and safe. That's the headline from the Washington Post. It'll be safe. Why will it be safe? Because the government will tell you that it's safe. On the same day that came out, they had a recall from Ford, 1.3 million vehicles, F-150s and Super Duty vehicles or whatever, they have door problems that can fly open or, you know, be able to get them charged. And it's like, we are a long ways from getting autonomous cars when they can't get doors that won't fly open on the road, right?
Yeah, you know, the only way that this could even conceivably work would be if you were to impose FAA-style protocols as they have for commercial airplanes. You know, they have to go in for routine and incredibly comprehensive inspections and maintenance and upkeep. Now, that might work for commercial aviation, where you're dealing with, a few thousand airplanes nationwide, perhaps. Now, how many cars are on the road?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
imagine that. And imagine the cost that would be involved. It's economic madness. And to get back to where we were before, I don't think the people behind this are dumb. I think they're well aware that it's economic madness. I think
they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. It is a technique for control. And it is a partnership between the big, giant corporations and the government to take away your freedom, to take away your movement. Thank you for joining us, Eric Peters. A great site, epautos.com, for honest information about mobility and liberty and cars as well. epautos.com. Thank you, Eric.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Now, let me tell you how they're deceiving you. You know, we were just talking to Eric Peters at epautos.com in the last segment, talking about this phony version of safety that they're now selling us. And, of course, we've always had the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, out there mandating all types of things to keep us safe, you know, just like the fire regulations think that they can make the world fireproof. They're going to make the roads crash proof. And yet they're now bragging. And it's not just the automotive press. It's this article from The Washington Post. Are those 80,000 pound trucks tailgating each other? Soon it'll be perfectly normal and safe. Why will it be safe? It'll be safe because NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, because NHTSA says so. Just like these drugs that Big Pharma sells are safe because FDA say so. They just say, yeah, yeah. It's like why my daughter, when she came back from China, she would, just as she was starting to speak English, she'd say, Baba say so. You know, so if Papa, you know, Baba says so, or Big Uncle Sam says so, it's safe. You know, Baba say so. So, you know, it's done. It's a done deal. And what is this going to look like? As I point out, it's going to be 80,000-pound trucks going bumper to bumper down the road. And you see the B-roll right there, going down the road. And the question is, see, for them, it's a good deal. Because for them, they say they can save 10% on fuel. But the truck in the front will also burn 5% less because of the drag issues. But, you know, it might be a bit of a drag if you're going along and you want to get off and you've got a wall of 80,000-pound trucks and you can't exit the highway. That would be a bit of a drag for you motorists, wouldn't it? But don't worry, because you're not going to be driving. They're going to take the steering wheel and the brakes away from you. And you're going to be just fine with the 80,000-pound vehicles cheek to jowl, and they don't really care whether you like that or not. And they said the good news is, I say, you know, it's going to be some problems, and they even admit what I just said. Immediately, I've been talking about that for a long time, and so they, at the very end of the article, they say, well, how fast should they be permitted to travel? How long will platoons block exit lanes that were not designed for such circumstances? So, you know, are they going to have these long platoons that are going to block the exit lanes? Are they going to be going really fast? Can we limit them to only the right lane rather than blocking multiple lanes of traffic? But, of course, you put them on the right lane, then you can't get off and so forth and so on. But don't worry, they said. The good news is that they're conducting research. How are they conducting research? They're doing it on the highway without your knowledge, without your consent. See, conducting experiments on humans like you, where you don't get, whether it's not informed and there is no consent, that has always been considered to be criminal, except when the government does it. Say, we've gone down this road, no pun intended, many, many times. They talked about how the EPA was conducting human experimentation. We've had Tuskegee and other issues like that. And you would think that we'd learn the lesson from it, but no, we don't. We're going to have totally driverless cars be allowed on California roads by June 2018. Why? Because they need to test them. They're going to have nobody behind the wheel. They need to test them. You're going to be the guinea pig. They're going to say, will they work with humans? Guess what they're going to find? No, there'll be a problem. And so we'll have to ban the humans, not the driverless robo-taxis, not the slave vehicles. And that's, as Eric was saying, General Motors has now moved their headquarters to New York, and they're going to be testing a fleet of self-driving cars in New York because they don't want you driving the cars. Let me tell you how this is all going to break down. There was a story, and it was linked on Drudge the end of last week or sometime over the weekend. Robot surgery firm from Sunnyvale, California is now facing lawsuits and reports of death and injury. And so all these people who were told over the years, don't worry, it's done by computers and robots. And computers and robots don't make mistakes. They're so much better than human surgeons. We have this thing now automated, and it's absolutely perfect. There's no mistakes, except when there are. And then you wind up facing a big corporation that won't accept liability. A big corporation that, as we know, has political clout. That's how it's going to come down on the highways with these cars. When they mess up, not going to be their fault. They'll find some way to blame it on you. And they won't pay when they damage you. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. It's censorship everywhere. We were just talking in the last half hour to Eric Peters. His site was censored economically as he questioned the political correctness of General Motors. This is a guy who wrote automotive as part of the automotive press as an independent, but he's been very successful. And he's had access to press pool cars for 25 years, and GM says, we're not going to do it. And he says, well, what's the basis? What's the metric for excluding me? He knew what it was. They would not admit it. Now we have a story that is up on Infowars.com. YouTube censors a viral video criticizing a liberal who said white men were a bigger threat than Islamic terrorists. The video was entitled "The Dumbest Liberal Ever." It received over 700,000 views before it was hidden behind an interstitial that reads, "The following content has been identified by the YouTube community as inappropriate or offensive to some audiences." And again, understand that the way that they apply this, the way it's being applied by both Facebook and by Google, YouTube, their mode, their vision for the future is that if anybody, anywhere, complains about anything, it is taken down. And that goes for videos, it goes for news articles, it goes for statues, doesn't it? Statues that we've had erected for centuries. If any single individual, any hypersensitive social justice warrior is triggered by something that they see, it must be removed. It must be taken down. Take Christopher Columbus and take him off of his pedestal. Ban him. Wish him into the cornfield. Put a sheet over it. And it's if they're going to do that to actual physical objects, big, heavy steel objects that have stood for centuries, you can bet that they're going to do it to things on the internet. Information that is bits, ones and zeros, videos, articles, and so forth. And so that is their plan. They will censor things if any individual, whether or not it is offensive in reality, whether or not it is fake, they will still say, if anybody says that, they will still take it down. That's the way this whole system works. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. And, you know, when they say the dumbest liberal ever, I don't know. When I first saw that, I thought, was that something about Frederica Wilson, the rhinestone cowgirl congressman, congresswoman? Well, actually, it wasn't. But, you know, she's brought up some interesting questions. One of the things that was never really discussed is why are we in Niger in the first place? I mean, had you ever even heard of that place? You've heard of Nigeria, but not Niger, the former French colony. And so some people are saying, why do we have soldiers there? Do you remember a discussion in public as to whether or not we're going to go to war in that particular country or whether or not we're going to commit troops to conflicts there? But that's the way these things go. They simply inform the Senate about it. And now we've got Democrats saying, gee, I didn't even know that we were there. But actually, they knew all along. You've got top senators of Congress reclaiming the last several days that they never had any idea that the U.S. military even had troops in Niger after the four Special Forces soldiers were killed there in an ambush beginning of October, October the 4th. Now it turns out that, yes, they were notified. They were notified by the president and the Pentagon, and that's about the only way that we have anymore to declare war, is we have these internal memos that circulate around Washington, D.C., saying that they're going to do something. Now, of course, they're there to fight, they say, Al-Qaeda. But I guess you could put troops in California to do that, or Las Vegas, or whatever. You could create an Al-Qaeda or ISIS threat anywhere in the world. And I'm sure that in Africa that is the case. We've seen what's been going on in Somalia years and years ago. Remember Black Hawk Down? That was in Mogadishu in Somalia. But the other part of this issue, besides just whether or not we're going to be in a constant state of war with the American empire, whether we're going to have troops in every country of the world in conflict, being not only the policemen of the world, but the active combatants worldwide. That's what the empire that we have right now is in. But the other part of that question is, are we going to turn Africa into the Middle East? You know, it was just a couple of Bilderbergs ago that they were talking a great deal about Africa. Why would they? Well, because of all of the minerals that are there and all the special things that they can get, natural resources that they can get. It's a very rich area in terms of natural resources. And just like you have in Afghanistan, you have an area that is rich in rare earth minerals. You also have an area that has perhaps the largest amount of lithium, as we're talking about putting batteries everywhere for everything, whether it is an automobile or a house, that is something that is very, very valuable. And that transcends whatever is happening there, but it is actually the basis of the politics involved there, I believe. Just as we now see just a couple of years after we saw Bilderberg saying Africa was at the top of their list of subjects that they're going to look at, they weren't concerned about the fact that many former colonies had turned into rabid Marxist dictatorships that were pursuing genocide against white people, like in Zimbabwe and South Africa. They weren't concerned about that. They weren't saying, how are we going to get civil liberties? How are we going to get democracy? How are we going to have a republic that respects individual rights? And that wasn't what Bilderberg elite, corporate, governmental were talking about. They were talking about, how are we going to get our hands on all those rich natural resources? How are we going to monopolize that? I know what we'll do. We'll create wars here like we did in the Middle East so we could get their oil. And so that's really what's going on behind all that. That's really what we should be talking about instead of this back and forth between President Trump and the widow and the congresswoman that the widow used to politicize this call, this call to console the widow. And, of course, I'm sure you've heard the call that was released by one of the other widows. She was very moved by the fact that the president would take out time to try to show them that he understood their pain, sympathized with them. And she played what the president had to say. But the other issue is, what are we going to do in that country? And what about the lives of soldiers who are being sent all over the world to fight for the American empire? That is a key issue. And, you know, when we look at what's going on in terms of our American empire, what is it predicated on? It's predicated on things like the petrodollar that allow us to go into debt $20 trillion. You know, we have this tax reform debate that's going back and forth. And the Democrats have all of a sudden decided that because some bureaucracy within the government has scored this and said, well, I think over the next decade, it'll add $1 trillion to the debt if we pursue this kind of tax policy. Add $1 trillion over the next decade? We've been adding more than $1 trillion every year under Obama, and the Democrats never noticed. But now they take notice if we're going to have some kind of a simplification of the tax code, if there's going to be some reduction in taxes. They say, oh, we can't do that because that's going to raise the deficit by another trillion. Look, we have a blank check that has been given to us by our fiat currency, and that fiat currency is supported not by gold, but by Saudis. They call it the petrodollar. And other countries who are hostile to us have caught on to that game, and they now have the power to do something about it. And I'm talking about China, I'm talking about Russia, and even the small players like Venezuela and Iran, because they're not small players when it comes to the oil market. We teamed with the Saudis, and now Russia is making its move to undo this. Here's an article from Russia Insider. And we've talked about how Russia has been making moves and China has been making moves to take down the petrodollar. Here's a good example. Russia is tripling its gold reserves in preparation for full-scale economic war with the United States. The Central Bank of Russia has more than doubled the pace of its gold purchases. They have tripled their gold reserves in just the last year. They're bringing the international gold reserves to the highest level since Putin became president 17 years ago. And they're doing it because they want to go to war with the U.S. petrodollar. See, the U.S. petrodollar is what allows us to create sanctions and other things. And having a gold-based currency would allow them to get around those sanctions, to get around the control that we use with our economic position. It will also create a great deal of economic hardship when we can't float these massive amounts of debt. And also remember, just keep this in mind as the Russians are doing this. This is why we attacked Libya, because he was creating a gold-backed currency. Very dangerous for real war. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. If you want to know what's going to be happening in the next 10 years, you need to take a look at Catalonia right now. Because what we see playing out there are the underlying forces that we've seen play out in the American election, that we've seen play out in Brexit. And that is the fight against global centralization versus localized control of your lives, of your government. And that's what's playing out in Catalonia right now. We're going to get to that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the products that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. This is what supports our operation. And we've put two of our most popular products, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, as well as Winter Sun, our vitamin D3. That's a liquid formula, vitamin D3. We have put those on sale 50% off. Silver Bullet colloidal silver and Winter Sun vitamin D. Those are both now 50% off. That's a new sale that we have just started. And one sale that's going to be ending pretty soon is going to be BrainForce Plus. We've had that on for 50% off for now a couple of weeks. And we're going to have to be pulling that off soon so that we can fulfill people who have signed up for AutoShip. You know, by the way, if you haven't signed up for AutoShip, you can get 10% off of every order. And if you pick what you want to order and the interval that you want to order it for, and you get 10% off all the time. And if your order, your periodic order, totals more than $50, you can get free shipping on that as well. Now, we also have Supermail Vitality at 30% off, Anthroplex at 50% off, and you can get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. That's VITA10. That's 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink at checkout when you enter the code VITA10. It's a great way to get all the essential vitamins and minerals that you need in a very easy to take drink format. I want to start here with a story about what happened in New York over the weekend. An elderly actress was brutally beaten and robbed in the West Village apartment building. Police are looking for a robber. They say targeted the elderly woman, punched her repeatedly in her apartment building lobby. The suspect punched her repeatedly in the head and the face. She said, I was an easy mark. I was just about ready to pull the key out of the door when I felt the really big blow on the back of my head. She fell to the ground, and the person repeatedly beat her and then ran off. And I start with that story because I want to talk about Catalonia. And Stalin was right. You know, one person killed is a tragedy. A million people killed is a statistic. And so in the same way, one beating like this, an 81-year-old actress, her beating is a tragedy. What about 1,000 people being beaten? Well, that's simply kind of a statistic. You know, we had some more information come out over the weekend about the final casualty totals in Catalonia as the Spanish jackbooted thugs went there to shut down that election. We had 1,066 people had to get medical care. 23 were more than 79 years old. 23 people were the age of this actress who was beaten at her apartment in New York by these thugs. So 23 were more than 79 years old. Two were children less than 11 years old. Almost half the people injured were between the ages of 41 and 65. 40% were aged between 18 and 40. 10% of the people injured were over 65, while 2% were children. This is what the Spanish police did to shut down the election. And they say some of these people, one individual was shot in the eye with a rubber bullet. Three cases of people who had various types of trauma, including severe traumatic brain injury, and so forth. This is what they did to shut down the election. And now they're coming out. The Spanish government has now doubled down. And as The Guardian puts it, the battle for Catalonia just got personal. Until now, the main protagonists, the Catalan president and Spain's prime minister, have avoided a head-on clash. But all that changed over the weekend after the Madrid government decided to impose direct rule. Within minutes, insults are flying back and forth of the opposing sides, accusing each other of totalitarianism and then, on the other side, rebellion. And let me tell you something. This is the way that it is going to come down. There's an article on Zero Hedge. It says, if you want to understand the next 10 years, study Spain. These are the forces that are the driving forces worldwide. The fight against globalism is going to be a fight, folks. They never give up power. These types of people will never give up power peacefully. We are not going to be transported to liberty on a feather bed, said Jefferson, and it's not going to be that way in our lifetime either. And if you want to understand not just the next 10 years, but if you want to understand the past 150 years of our own history, you can go back and you can look at the American Civil War, if you will. It really wasn't a civil war. One side was just trying to get independence. It was no more of a civil war than, you know, Catalan. The Catalonian government is not trying to take control over the rest of Spain. They simply want to be independent. They're simply trying to secede. That's what happened 150 years ago. And yes, there was a component of slavery, but it was happening all over Europe, and slavery was not involved there. It was agrarian versus industrialization. It was the industrialized manufacturing powers that were asserting their political dominance over the agrarian established industries. It was a war of consolidation. That began the move towards a centralization of power. And when you look at the issues in the American Civil War, slavery was just one of them. Even if they had kept slavery, if they had instituted the protectionist trade of the mercantile people in the North, then they wouldn't have been able to sell their goods. So there were a lot of different economic issues that were transcendent to that. And always you follow the money. That's why I talked about what was going on in Vegas and MGM yesterday in that report. But as this writer, Michael Krieger from Liberty Blitzkrieg, points out, he says, I believe what's currently happening in Spain represents a crucial microcosm for what is going to sweep across the entire planet in the next decade. It's an example of the forces of centralization duking it out with the forces of decentralization. Madrid, with its leaders claiming that Spain is forever indivisible, and then the forces of decentralization rising in Catalonia. They say entrenched entrenched centralized institutions and the bureaucrats that run them will become increasingly terrified, panicked, and oppressive. And that's what we're seeing now beginning in Catalonia. And as this thing was beginning and the Spanish government was talking very tough, I predicted that we were going to see the Spanish government start to act like Abraham Lincoln, start to shut down freedoms. Wait till he had already started shutting down the press and attacking people there. You're going to see them shut down other types of civil liberties as well, just as Abraham Lincoln did. They say humanity's current established centralized institutions and nation states have become clownishly corrupt, writes Michael Krieger, merely existing to protect and enrich the powerful and the connected, as opposed to benefiting the population at large. And we see this in the election in the United States. We see it with the Brexit. We see it with Bitcoin. And he said, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see sufficient change in this regard without hardship. And I would say violence. It is going to come down to violence. These people are going to get violence. You haven't seen anything yet from the Spanish government after they shut down the election, because now they're saying that they're going to shut down the government in general and demanding that they have an election and not have the parties that have been ruling in that election be able to participate in the election. So they say, we're not going to recognize your election, the one that we tried to but could not stop. Isn't that interesting? Even with all those jackbooted thugs, they still had 40% of the people vote. And when those 40% of the people voted, 90% of them said they wanted independence. It only makes people want it more when you take away their freedom. And so they say, we're not going to follow the orders from Madrid, and we're not going to have another election. We just had one, and you need to follow it. And they've had 450,000 people take to the streets of Barcelona this last weekend to show their open defiance to the Spanish dictator. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to Arthur Thompson of the John Birch Society. We'll be right back. Said there are decades when nothing happens, and there are weeks when decades happen. I think we're in that kind of a period right now. I think we're in a period where in weeks we see decades happening. And as you heard that music come in, that of course is the International. I thought that'd be a great way to get Arthur Thompson of the John Birch Society fired up, because I'm sure as a staunch anti-communist, it gets him as fired up and angry when I hear that song as it does me. Makes me want to take a knee. No, actually, that's not the response that I want to take. But I would, if I thought that was a reasonable protest, I guess I would be more inclined, as Larry Pinckney said, I'd be inclined to raise a fist when I hear that song, not take a knee. I'm not going to get into a submissive position to communists. And neither will the John Birch Society. Arthur Thompson is the CEO of the John Birch Society. He has held virtually every volunteer and staff position at the Society. He's got an upcoming book entitled To the Victor Go the Myths and Monuments, the History of the First 100 Years of the War Against God and the Constitution, from 1776 to 1876. You'll find the society at jbs.org, and also they have a news site, thenewamerican.com. That's they had a magazine. I guess they've transformed that into a website. But joining us now is Arthur Thompson. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Thompson.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about just tell us, as we're talking about the we're here at the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, And tell us a little bit about John Birch, for example. Many people are puzzled by the name John Birch Society. So tell us where this name came from, because you've been involved in the fight against communism from the very beginning.
Well, John Birch was a Baptist missionary to China from the United States, Georgia. And he went to China to serve a mission there. He became very well known in the area. He opened up language schools for Chinese youth, did all sorts of Christian works there. This was about the time that the Japanese had invaded China. He worked on both sides of the line. And then on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor, he was behind Japanese lines doing his missionary work and had to go into hiding. It was he, actually, who helped rescue the crew of Jimmy Doolittle on the famous raid on Tokyo in April of 1942. Now, you won't read that in a lot of the things about that raid, but we've even had people here in the area who served on that crew who testified that that was the case. At any rate, he led the men back into safety from the Japanese-held territory of China into the nationalist Chinese area, and at that time volunteered to work and to enlist, actually, in the United States Army. Keep in mind that the Air Corps at that time was part of the Army. It was not a separate Air Force. At any rate, Claire Chennault, who was the head of the Flying Tigers, told him that, well, I've got all the pastors I need. What I need is a man like you who can operate behind Japanese lines and give us intelligence as to what is going on. And that's what John Birch did most of the war, was he was behind the enemy lines giving intelligence into Claire Chennault. And as a result, they were able to bomb a lot of strategic areas, ships, airports, that sort of thing. At any rate, there's more to that particular story. But at the end of the war, about 10 days after the war, John Birch was put in charge of a detachment to go effect the surrender of a Japanese garrison. On the way there, he was intercepted by Chinese communists, at which time they bayoneted him to death. Mm. Now, that story was hidden by the Army and the State Department. There are a number of reasons why they did that, but nonetheless, it was done. There was a monument, by the way, built to John Birch there in China before China was literally given over to the Chinese communists. That's another story in and of itself. It's part of the John Birch story, but not precisely. They wanted the American people to support Mao Zedong, and so they didn't want anything out into the press in the United States that would give a negative image of the Chinese communists. Mm-hmm. So that's why they hushed up John Birch's story. Robert Welch came across this story as a result of being a friend of a United States senator who was looking into the situation. And he was so taken with this man, his service, the kind of individual he was, that he wrote a book, The Life of John Birch. Then when he formed the society, he decided to name it after him because he exemplified the character that we like to see in Americans, and asked the permission of John Birch's family if it would be okay, and they said, absolutely. And so that's how we got the name.
So that's interesting, because in that story, I see woven through that narrative that you gave us about John Birch the missionary, I see the threads in the John Birch Society. Christianity, volunteerism, fighting communism, and also government cover-up of what is really there for their own purposes. I mean, all of those issues are right there in that story, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and it continues today.
Let's talk a little bit about the 100th anniversary of communism. You know, one of the things that Lenin said, and I've had several quotes from Lenin, and I'll do some more in the coming days, because I think it's very interesting. You have to know your enemy. And you have to know the way that these people operate. You know, many times we look at the Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky and others. But it's also important to know what individuals like Lenin said and how they manipulate things. One of the things he said was, medicine is the keystone of the arch of socialism. And yes. I think that is that is why Obamacare is such a central issue, isn't it?
Well, it's half of why the reason is it's essential. The thing is that we understand that it's essential to building socialism within a country. But in order to be able to merge the United States into Canada or Mexico or into any sort of a new world order, it's necessary that it's comfortably merged. To be comfortably merged, we have to have a socialist medical system rather than a free enterprise one, because all these other countries that they want us to merge with all have socialized medicine. And free enterprise and socialist enterprise don't mix. One of the two has to go. And so that is really why they want to keep some remnants of Obamacare, no matter what they do, no matter how far they have to step back and come back later. They need that structure for future mergers into this new world order. And there are other aspects of it outside of medicine, too, but that one's a very important one.
That is a very key observation, because having that structure there, as I've said many times, if you don't take it out root and branch, if you leave some kind of a health czar there who's going to dictate stuff to us, we're not going to have any freedom. But as you're pointing out, it's making everybody comfortable as they merge us regionally. And another part of that, which is very important, and we're happy to see that President Trump, on as soon as he took office, got us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because we know what they do economically. They create these regional unions on the basis of economics and of trade. And then as things go along, they move that to a political union. And we've seen that playing out in the European Union. And we know that was exactly what was designed with the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Partnerships as well, don't we, Mr. Thompson?
That's right. And when you have economic merger, it is always followed by political merger. There's never an exception to that. But let me caution the viewers about one thing. It's true that Trump got us out of the TPP, but there are still individuals in his administration that want those provisions of the TPP into other agreements. And there's a lot of talk about it relative to the renegotiation of NAFTA, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And he has people diehards in terms of the climate agreement, the Paris Climate Agreement, that want to stay in that, even though he says, well, we're going to get out of it. They say, no, I think we can still move that around so that we stay in it. They are not going to give up. And there's a lot of people, unfortunately, even in the Trump administration, who are pushing back against the agenda that President Trump ran on and some of the things that he's done, trying to keep these structures in place. When we come back, we're going to talk to Art Thompson of the John Birch Society. And we're going to take a look at these structures. We're going to take a look at the legacy of communism. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. You can find them at jbs.org. Also, their publications or articles at thenewamerican.com. We're going to talk about the 100 years of communism that we've seen. It's been 100 years now since the October Revolution that began the Russian communist state. But now we see the rise of Putin. We see the rise of Xi Jinping. And I want to talk to Mr. Thompson about what he sees in terms of foreign enemies, as well as what we see in terms of the rise of progressive socialists. As I was talking earlier, one individual who had escaped Cuba at an early age with his family said he was grateful to Bernie Sanders for at least coming out and being honest about the fact that he was a socialist. Instead of using misleading labels like liberal and progressive, he just comes out and owns it as a socialist. And he's out there telling people, hey, you know, sure, you'll pay more taxes, but you're going to get a lot of free stuff, too. Yeah, you're going to get free stuff, all right. Things that you never even bargained for will be included in that package deal. Well, that always happens in communist countries. But I also want to take a look at what is going abroad, the external threats as well. So we're going to be talking to Arthur Thompson in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the sales at InfoWarsStore.com. We are still continuing for a short period of time the massive discounts on BrainForce Plus, 50% off while sales last. Also, Supermale Vitality, 30% off, and Anthroplex, 50% off. We've added a new sale, two very popular items, Silver Bullet, that's our colloidal silver, as well as Winter Sun, that's our liquid vitamin D. Both of those, 50% off. The 50% off Silver Bullet, colloidal silver, and Winter Sun vitamin D. 50% off. And we have 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink mix. Just enter the code VITA10, that's V-I-T-A 10, to get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink at checkout. All right, Mr. Thompson, you know, when we look at this and the book that you have written, To the Victor Go, The Myths and the Monuments, you know, I think about the monuments that are now being torn down everywhere. This is a unique experience in America, but we see this when regimes are overthrown. It's a common thing for them to throw down the monuments, isn't it? To take them off of their pedestals. It's a very important, powerful thing to have monuments and even have myths. And I guess you could look at it in the sense that Joseph Campbell talked about, or C.S. Lewis talked about myths. Not necessarily as C.S. Lewis would talk about it. He said, you know, Christ is the greatest myth, and he didn't mean it as I don't believe it, that it's fake. He was talking about it as being a massive epic narrative that gives foundation to a culture or to a religion. And so we see those things under attack now, the myths of our society, if you will, as well as the monuments, don't we?
Yes, we do. And it's interesting, though, that some of these monuments are selected out while others are not. We do have monuments around the country of known communists, particularly the most apparent one, I think, would be in Seattle with the monument to Lenin. Nobody's talking about tearing that down.
That's right.
But you have to get rid of history. And part of getting rid of history as a communist is getting rid of anything that will contradict the communist narrative. And that's what they don't want. So they're tearing down all sorts of things. And it's reached the point of being ridiculous, really. But mm-hmm. the problem is we don't have enough people standing up. Now, I don't mean standing up in the streets. I mean standing up in City Hall, in the county seat, and particularly in Congress. I go to Congress a couple of three times a year. I talk personally with 20 to 50 members of Congress on each trip. One-on-one. And let me tell you, the people are not standing up in the halls of Congress about what's going on out in the hinterlands. Now, I know there are a lot of people very upset about what's going on and the lack of intestinal fortitude on the part of our elected officials. And I've tried to point that out to these people in Congress. But let me give you one quote. I was sitting with the aide of a very good congressman, and I don't want to get into names. And the aide looked me in the eye and said, you know, even the best of the Republican conservatives are a bunch of wimps. They won't stand up for anything anymore.
That's right.
And it's true. And that's what's going on with the elimination of our history in this country is people are not standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute. I as a mayor or I as a county commissioner or I as a governor, whatever, this is enough. I'm willing to do anything it takes to do that. Even if you come and say that the court has ruled that this cross has to come down, that's fine. Let the court come down and enforce it. Meanwhile, I'm going to stand there and make sure that it does not happen. Those sorts of things are not there anymore.
The only person that I can think of that took that kind of approach is Roy Moore. He understood the importance of monuments, didn't he? He put up Commandment monument, and they had to remove him from office because he would not let them take that down. It was very fundamental, and we understand that now. In hindsight, I think, as we see how eager they are to take down any monuments from everything from Christopher Columbus on, they want to take down every monument to any aspect of Western civilization here in the United States. And he also stood on the monumental importance of the 10th Amendment when they unconstitutionally declared at the Supreme Court that they would have homosexual marriage. He said they don't even have the authority to do that. And I've had a lot of honest people who supported homosexual marriage come on and say, I support that, but they didn't have the authority to do that. There's no way that the Supreme Court has the authority to do that. So even though they agreed with the outcome, they understood the danger when you throw away the legal process and you throw away the Constitution. I've had many people on the left who have come on the program and talked about that aspect. But Judge Roy Moore was removed not once but twice from office because he would not ignore the foundations of our country in the Constitution.
That's right, and people appreciate that. I mean, he didn't do anything violent or anything else. He just stood his ground and was willing to take a personal hit. To stand on principle, and that's what people want in their elected officials. I hope he's able to come through in the final election and go into Congress, into the Senate. We'll see how well he performs there. But that's
I think that's one of the reasons we saw the establishment Republicans spend $30 to $32 million to attack him personally, because they don't want somebody like that in Congress. Yes.
Well, the thing is that we have to understand that at the top, there really is no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. When you start to scratch away at the surface of what's going on, the Republicans have a better way of expressing themselves, seemingly more responsible and that sort of thing. But the end product of where they're going is the same end product of where the Democrats are going. And that is international merger into a one world government. Now, they may take different paths and so on and so forth, but that is really what is happening.
And I think you can see that pretty clearly, Mr. Thompson, with the last the presidential election we had before this last one. We had Romney and you had Obama. Both of them were going to give us Obamacare. One would give us Romney Care, which is exactly the same as Obamacare. So they give you two individuals who are different looking, and they have different parties, but they were going to get through one way or the other. Whoever you voted for, you were going to get socialized medicine. And if you look at the election before that, I think with Obama and with McCain, what they were pushing for was an increased surveillance state, things like the NDAA, where, you know, they take away your due process and other ways. I think that they had the two of them on board with the surveillance state, the military industrial complex, just like the following election. It was both of them were on the same side with whatever the important issue that the establishment wanted to push through for that election, which was health care.
That's right. And when it comes to McCain, one of the problems that we have with that gentleman is that people should take a very close look at what he has done in the Middle East to stir up the problems that we had there in Libya, in Egypt, and places of that nature. He was very much involved in bringing those in bringing instability to those countries. And that's a story that needs to be put out there more than what it is.
Yes. Yeah. We look at him as the individual shopping around that dirty dossier. He had been meeting with all of these so-called moderate terrorists in Syria. And as soon as President Trump stopped the CIA from shipping arms to those people, they had some major victories. I don't think they're going to win a war. They're never going to win a war. I don't think of occupation like that. But just real quickly, we've only got about a minute. What do you see coming from China now? We've seen Xi Jinping establishing a cult of personality there, just like Mao did.
Yes, that's true. One of the things that we have to do in regard to both China and Russia is to take a look at the various individuals in our major industries who are selling out American industry to these two countries. Now, I'm not talking about simply little widgets and gadgets at Walmart. What I'm talking about is helping them develop their aircraft industries and all sorts of things that are going to come back and haunt us if we ever are in a war with these people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I wish we had more time, and we'll have to get you on again soon. Thank you for joining us. We've been talking to Arthur Thompson. He is the CEO of the John Birch Society. You can find them at jbs.org or thenewamerican.com. That concludes our broadcast today. Thank you for joining us. I'm David Knight.
I'm a rock star now.